Yes, we are live. Another episode of Fire Builders Live. My name is Joshua Corpel, and I am streaming live from Key West, Florida. Today, we have a very, very special guest, Terry Trespicio. Welcome to Fire Builders Live.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. We've got a lot to talk about. Before we get into who you are and what you're doing and where you are and all of this stuff, let me tell you, for those that are watching, if you're unfamiliar with how Fire Builders Live actually works, what we do is we stream live Monday through Saturday, every day around noon Eastern Standard Time. We bring on experts and we take these big ideas and we break them down into small things that you can do every day to improve. And today is going to be a great episode. Terry, so let me see. I want to make sure that I can give you some justice here. Of all of the things that you have done in your life, right? Award-winning speaker, writer, brand advisor. You've been on the Today Show. You've been on Dr. Oz. You've been on Martha Stewart. You worked with Martha Stewart. You were a magazine editor and radio host for her. You've got this incredible YouTube video that has gotten over 6 million views. It's a TED Talk, and it's about how to stop searching for your passion. Obviously, a very important and very, you know, for lack of a better word, passionate topic for people that you hear just thrown around all the time these days. And now you're the owner of Terry Trespicio LLC, where you work with individuals, organizations, helping them nail down their messaging and their branding. Also, on top of all of this, HubSpot just recently named you as one of the top 18 female speakers who are killing it, where you edged out Oprah, of all people, where you were number two, she's number eight. So, you know.
Yeah, like, who knows what that ranking means? I don't know that it means anything. I was just really psyched to be on that list because a lot of people find that when they're looking for speakers. So it has become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's amazing. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, like, I'm just happy that you're on the show today, that we were able to find the time. So again, welcome to Fire Builders Live.
Thank you.
And so let's start by just, where are you in the world? And how did you, as far as I'm interested, because we just touched on the speaking thing and getting up on stage and kind of nailing messaging, how did you kind of get started with the whole speaking engagement?
Well, first, I am in Manhattan. I am right here in New York City, where I've been living for a decade. And look, I always like to talk. The people who are drawn to speaking usually know. Other people are dragged to speaking and they don't know. And then they discover how rewarding it can be, or they're more concerned with the mission. They can put their own discomfort out of the way. But I have never felt really uncomfortable on stage. And so I had that going for me. But, I started, where you start. You start with any job and find ways to have a reason to say things in front of other people. And before that TED Talk, I was doing it where I could. And the most recent was right before I got laid off from the magazine, because like that magazine closed a year later. I was invited to go speak at a gym here, like in Columbus Circle. And I went and no one showed up.
You were speaking on stage and no one showed up.
It was like, come to a workshop. Like, I don't know that they promoted it. Like, now I understand there's a lot of pieces that have to be in place, but I remember showing up and no one was there. And to me, of course, it has nothing to do with me. They didn't promote the event. They didn't manage the event. Whatever the case was, they're like, well, I guess you can leave. And I remember walking home and being so frustrated, being like, I can't wait till I can share, like any speaker wants to do, share something of value and the people actually show up for. But really, any opportunity I had to speak, I took it in the beginning. And so, yeah, sometimes that meant speaking for free. Sometimes, I mean, before you have any demand, I don't know that it's something you can necessarily charge for when you're brand new out of the gate. But that TEDx talk changed my life in many ways. And it wasn't like I applied for it, which is really, if anyone's feeling the itch to do a TEDx talk, you can apply for one anywhere. There are hundreds of thousands of them all over the world. But the way I got that talk, and people always ask me this, it's like, how did you get it? Did you apply for it? There was an event happening a month away from now. It's TEDx Kansas City. And a journalist who was supposed to speak there had to drop out. And so they were kind of scrambling. And someone who I don't even know personally had just seen me on social media was like, hey, you sound like you spout off a lot. It sounds like you have something to say. Looks like you've been doing some stuff. You know, do you want to be in touch with them, pitch an idea? I was like, yes. And again, having that opportunity, that rare, weird window I didn't plan for, I got on a call with this guy who runs the event. He said, so do you have a TED Talk in you? And I said, I don't know. I have a couple ideas. Let's talk them through. And he was like, okay. And so we talked them through and he said, why don't you write a little bit of that and come back tomorrow? And we'll talk tomorrow. And then I wrote a little bit of it and I came back. He goes, why don't you develop that further and come back tomorrow? And I talked to him every day for 5 days, 6 days in a row. And I was like, so Mike, do I need to buy a plane ticket? Like, what are we making here? And he was like, yeah, you're going to get to do it. And I wasn't the only one. He was talking to a bunch of people. But the reason that talk sold, of course, you're not paid to do a TEDx talk, was because it attacked or challenged a widely held idea. So there's, how do you build speaking as a business? That's one whole other thing you can do no matter what business you're in. Everyone comes at it from an idiosyncratic standpoint. I happen to have a pretty amazing opportunity, but even if I hadn't had that TED Talk, I would still be speaking now. It's just that that became a huge bat signal that got a lot of attention. And the reason it did was because I wasn't, you can't promote stuff that you do. I didn't even really know what I was doing 5 years ago. But I attacked an idea that is popularly held, which is that, if you just find your passion, if you can find it and search for it and then follow it anywhere, you'll have all the money and happiness you want. And I think that is a wild goose chase and a recipe for disaster. So the way I built the speaking career happened to be that I was able to get attention with that talk. But the things I get hired to speak about lately are connected to that talk. But for a long time, it wasn't. That talk was how I got on their radar. And they said, what do you want to talk to our group about? And so I had the opportunity to teach things that I was good at. But then now I'm finding that there's a lot of interest in that topic more and more. And it's grown. Certainly it's right at this time. It's over 6 million people have seen it. And it's not because of me. And that's important to know too. I'm not famous. I didn't have any kind of platform when I did that talk. Good ideas can take hold.
And it just shows you the power of taking advantage of the opportunities as they come. Like, you know, a lot of people, when they say, oh, I'm just going to search for my passion, I'm just going to wait for these things to happen to me. Once I find that passion, then everything's going to fall into place. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. You have to make opportunities for yourself,
right?
Try things out, experiment with things for those opportunities, those special moments to show up in your life and actually change you in some way, shape or form, like this, you know, like somebody dropping out and you stepping into that role, you know, example.
Some of it's chance. And some of it is seizing an opportunity. But the problem I have with it, which is what the talk's about, is what it does is stall people. You know, people think like, I just have to find that one thing. It's kind of like, it's just as silly as saying, I can't live my life until I find the perfect partner. Well, the perfect job, the perfect partner. If you are holding off to find something that has to be exactly perfect and the one thing you're going to do forever and ever, you are actually just procrastinating the work that you feel that you could be doing. And I know from someone who was afraid of that, like I was afraid to take any job when I was in my 20s. I thought I'll get locked into it forever. You're lucky if you have a job that will keep you forever. That's not actually the problem. This idea that there's one thing you should be doing, you're supposed to wait till that thing materializes and then follow it to the ends of the earth. If some people will swear that's what they did. They always played the cello. Now they are a musician. They get paid to play the cello. And they still play the cello. That's great. That's a very small percentage of the population. Everyone else is ripping their hair out because they think they're supposed to know something about what their life means when actually no one does, including me.
All just making it up as we go along,
That's it.
Doing the best we can.
That's it. You think I have some secret that I know the secret? No, I wouldn't be on my own if I hadn't been laid off from the magazine. I was like, what do I do now? Let me do that. Like you, it's how you respond to what happens. You already have what you need to do a great job in lots of things, but it's like people don't give it a chance or they're afraid to, what does this mean? They're all about what they're going to put on their business card, what their title and what they're doing. And it's like, you know what? Just find ways to do what you're good at in a way that serves other people. That's the message.
And that's what I love about, like, because I watched that TED Talk and there was one particular thing that you said that really resonated. And I've seen that in my own life, which was where most people think it's like that it's the passion that comes first And then that leads to a better process. Like a better,
who made that up? Who made that weird linear process up? I think you dreamed it.
But it's, and you find as you do, you know, new things in your life, more and more things, that it's actually the process itself, right? And you going through these steps that then you find that, hey, I really like this. I, you know, I'm good at this, or, you know, I like the way this makes me feel. So I'm going to just keep going and going and start to become interested in the nuances of that thing.
But how do you know that?
Yeah, exactly.
You think you're going to major in it? You think you're going to know based on one book? I mean, like the best example is to say, like, look at a someone who makes their living as a recording artist, as a singer. And you'll be like, well, how did you know? Well, I always loved to sing. And they'll cut back to the 80s when she was like singing into an old style camcorder. Oh, she was always born to be a star. Do you know how many other kids sang into camcorders and loved to sing for their family and just kind of didn't decide to pursue the career in singing, or for a lot of reasons, other things came up? So we do this reverse engineering. We go, oh, see, she always knew. Well, you could go back and connect the dots any way you want. But a lot of kids put on shows for their families and aren't professional performers. And I think we give ourselves a hard time, like, we're supposed to know. I always knew I loved to write, but I did not know what it meant to have a career in writing. And what I thought I knew scared me, and some of it bored me. I remember I was in an interview for a professional tech writing job. I thought, oh, writing for technical writing, I could do that. I almost fell asleep in the interview. I was like, oh my God.
Bad sign.
Maybe it was, I was like, oh my God, I'm falling asleep just in this interview. Now, of course, I would have made that interview more fun, but that was a job I didn't want. Yeah, sure, they would have paid you to write. Is that what would make you a writer? No. So I think we get locked into one idea about how to define things, and it actually ruins things for us.
Agreed. And yeah, and for people that are listening too, I'm sure this resonates with folks. Like, it's just that, you know, you're told, you write that you see people that are out there and successful, and you say to yourself, man, like, they knew and they just stuck to their guns.
Right.
And
they sailed through.
Right. And they sailed through, and man, and I didn't do that. So
I missed the boat.
I'm screwed now. Yep. My life, like, I'll never get to that, that level. And that's kind of one of the, that's like a great kind of segue into what we're going to talk about today. For those that feel like they've missed that, if you're watching this and you maybe feel like, man, I should have, if I would have only started earlier, or, you know, something like that.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. And so in order to find that again, in order to tap back into that sense of yourself, to sort of almost reinvent yourself in a way, in your experience working with so many people, talking to them about this, what have you found as, you know, the one thing to start doing that? Like, if somebody could just do that one small thing every day to just start to get a sense of themselves again, right? And start to maybe pull themselves out of that mentality that it's going to be impossible for them, that they've missed the boat. I don't know. What do you think it would be for you?
For me, well, I think that what I'm going to say isn't necessarily going to resonate for everyone, but I, as a writer, I know that I have to write in order to know what I'm thinking. I don't think it and then write it. I write it. And through the process of writing, for me, I found that it helps distill and sort of crystallize, oh, that's what I think. And in fact, I actually lead a lot of writing groups and writing workshops for people who are writers, but also people who are not people who define themselves as writer, who don't identify as a writer. I believe there's something to the act of writing that accesses part of your brain that most people have locked shut after they were criticized by a teacher, by someone, you know, above them, a boss, something. And that the very thing you need to tap is that creativity. And I don't mean watercolor painting if you're not a watercolorist. But what I think is that we have divided up. We think it's linear. I should have known what I was doing and done it all along. I could have been famous. Or I'm not a this and I'm not a that. I'm not creative. I'm not this. No, 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 no. The only thing that makes a creative person creative is the fact that they are human, and we are wired with the ability and urge to create, to make things. Some people have chosen to make it their living. Some haven't. Regardless of that, I do think that. But another, I'll recommend a book that I really opened my eyes a lot was The Creative Habit by Twyla Tharp, who's the famous dancer and choreographer. And what she's a brilliant writer. I had no idea, God, how well read she is. I was like, oh my God, like, she's inspiration. But one of the things she says is, what will determine your life 5 years from now will be based largely on the books you read and the people you meet. What that means is you don't just sit and journal about how you hate everything and nothing worked out for you. You need to be exposing yourself to new ideas by smart, intelligent, open-minded people from lots of different perspectives. And you must meet people. You must be willing to meet and try on different perspectives. And also the relationships are what lead to things. Somehow we think we're supposed to make up a job out of a box and find someone to hand it to us. That just doesn't work. There's no job without people. And there's no work without relationships. There's no work without relationships. If you cannot find ways to connect with and serve other people, you will not find work. And that's important because, hey, I realize, let's check our privilege moment. I am very aware that I have had the benefits of a very privileged upbringing. I got to go to these nice schools and I live in a nice apartment. Like, that plays a role and I get it. And I think it's really important to say that now when we're realizing again how unfairly things are skewed in our culture. Sure. And so that's important to say. And it's not like, oh, just start your business. Like, oh, I'll be a consultant. I understand that's not what everyone's going to do. But now when people are millions and millions of unemployed, how are we going to do things? We have a lot of things to fix as a country, and we have a lot of systems to fix, but we also have to change the way we see what we bring to the workplace. And it's not just get a job, and there's no jobs. There may be no jobs. There's got to be work because we have never needed the talents of other people as much as we do right now. Your job as a person is to find creative ways to serve that. Can you draw on all the resources you have to serve a need? And we see people marching in the streets who are making big change. And that wasn't a job they sent their resume in for. They chose the job with their feet. And, you know, hats off to the people who are doing that and standing for real change. This is an exciting time to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an exciting time to do it. It's a prevalent time to do it. You're right about the relationships that lead to opportunities, that lead to work. In a sense that we're like in everything that's happening socially right now and the privilege that is being brought to everybody's attention now, you know, it really does stem to the relationships that you build. And, you know, it's not always easy to do that. Like, you know, I completely 100% agree that it is a tough thing to be able to create relationships when you're systemically denied the opportunities to, you know, create those types of relationships. And then the work and the everything else that is downwind of that, you know, you can't just expect that someone. So all I'm saying is yes.
Right. Because I completely agree. We have to reimagine what these things are. If people are right now thinking about what does it mean to reimagine what police departments look like. We're reimagining institutions that have been around forever. That means we have to reimagine. You can't just say, well, I'm an HR employee and I need a place to be an HR employee. It's like, well, but what are you really doing? And like, what is it? What could you really help with? You know, if this is a time for that kind of innovation and vision. And don't tell me you need a degree to do it. You don't need to be blessed by a certain institution to be able to have something special to offer. And I do think people kind of talk themselves down. They think, well, no one wants to hear from me and I couldn't do that. It's like, but could you?
One of the interesting questions that came up in one of these interviews not too long ago was the idea that whenever you have that voice, like you were saying, that creative voice, maybe it was a teacher, maybe it was way back in the day that said, no, you can't do this. As you get older and you start to listen more and more to that voice, I think as kids, we just accepted it was true. But now as adults, it's important to understand like whose voice that actually is.
Yeah,
and as a question that like I'd never really asked myself before was like, who is saying that? Like, who do I hear when I say that? Maybe now it's just me because I've said it to myself over and over again, but who was it before?
Right.
And that helps kind of.
The critic. The critic could be, you know, obviously we know that self-doubt, but you're right. That voice came from somewhere. And probably we internalize from adults and people who told us this is how you, you know, if you've been criticized a lot, you're going to internalize that voice. But then there's people who have loving parents who never criticize them, and they're still really hard on themselves. I'm not a psychologist. I don't understand how all of that works, except to say that we hear things loud and clear from school, from institutions, and from our culture about what we think is stupid or not right. And we should question it. Question it every time, because is it true? A lot of times it's not. But also when you just said, who is that voice? That gets into real deep philosophical territory, right? Because like, well, I am the one, if we see ourselves, the soul, the person who makes me, me, and you, you, as the one who observes and the one who hears, if we hear the critic talking, then we are outside of it. Then we are observing it. There's power there because it says, I'm hearing it and I can choose how to respond. I can choose not to listen.
Yep, exactly. And I can choose to act on the things that I feel like I need to act on without any type of that self-criticism involved, because that's where the exploration lies. And at least for me personally, everything that I have done up until this point where I've said, man, I don't know how this is going to turn out. I don't even know if I should be doing this. All I know is that I'm just going to give it a shot and see what happens. It has always turned out for the better. Every single time. And
does it mean it's going to end up happy?
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe you want to see whose lives have improved for the better? Ask people who have lost their jobs or had cancer. That sounds like two horrible things to happen to someone. And yet the people who are truly resilient, they'll say, oh, if that happened and that happened, it changed my life. No one ever said the ice cream I bought today changed my life. It's probably the things that happened. And this is what we were talking about with the kind of age old movement of the Stoic movement of age old philosophers, right? Marcus Aurelius, all those that I just happen to be reading about right now. Your response to what happens is what matters, you know, and it's not a guarantee that like, well, this is kind of a little bit infantilizing, like, well, everything will work out and someone will take care of me. It's like bad things do happen, but we do have a choice.
We do. We always have a choice. And so, I mean, I am a huge fan of what you're suggesting as far as getting out there, getting outside of your head and just sort of saying, screw it and going for it. And, you know, some of the stuff that you have done as well in your life, like, you know, just for instance, the comedy side of things, right? Yeah. The comedy, I'm sure, is a huge vehicle to figuring out who you are, like what you stand for, why you are the person that you are. I mean, you get to those essential truths that way.
Well, comedy, any kind of comedy is great education to do without having to make a living from it. Like I've taken years of improv classes. I took years of comedy. I perform comedy. I am essentially by all measures an amateur comic. I'm not making a living from comedy. And I don't think anyone's making a living from comedy right now, except like Seinfeld. But the idea of apprenticing yourself to a thing, you can take an improv class, you can take several and not think, well, now I have to make my living as an improv person. These bigger goals that you have to be the one now. What if you exposed yourself to stuff and tried it? And I'll tell you, the improv led to more insight around who I was than comedy. Comedy, I'm telling you, you do not have to be funny. You just need to learn the skill of joke writing. You learn that skill and learn to deliver it. It is almost scientific. What will make someone laugh? Da, da, da. It's not about being a great big personality. There's a lot of big personalities who aren't funny. So comedy is a skill. You can learn it. I liked learning it. It helped me tighten up my stuff. It helped me be brave because I'd much rather speak at a conference with 3,000 people than in a comedy club with 20. That's scarier for me for sure. But improv acting taught me something I didn't realize it would. It taught me trust of other people because you jump into a scene, you don't know what's going to happen. You rely on your wits. You rely on communication and what the group can do together. I liked the class studying improv more than I liked performing it. Performing it felt like a lot of pressure. Like, was this going to end up funny? But taking it, one of the things that, and you might enjoy this, one of the exercises was, okay, who are you in a scene? Like, what do you do? What's your go-to thing? Because when you're out there and you don't know what you're about to talk about, there's certain comforting things that you'll go to. And one of them is question asking. Well, ask question. Well, what are we doing? What da da da? And they would stop you and go, okay, don't ask any questions in the scene. You must make decisions. Because when you ask questions, you're putting the burden on someone else. What? And so then you'd go into a scene. Every time you ask a question, they go,
totally screws you up. It totally
screws you up. and makes you stop and go, why am I not making decisions? Why am I making someone else make them for me? That's one. And the second one was, I realized in every scene I was in, I always played an angry person or picked a fight. And I was like, and I'm not generally walking around angry, but I realized somehow I associated interest and excitement with having to create some turmoil. And I was like, anger is my go-to. Why is that? So I learned a lot about myself doing that. And so I recommend that once classes start up again, you want to really see how you react to things, take a class where there's no script.
And it's just a blank slate.
It's a blank slate. You're going to find out who you are real quick.
Yeah. 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 Oh man. Well, you know, I there's tons of comedy down here in Key West. I think I'm actually going to do that.
You totally should. Honest. Everyone should take this. It is a little scary, but it makes you think about audience and also makes you think, what am I saying that has a point? Because what do new comics do? They overwrite their jokes. They write too long, too much setup, too much whatever. It helped my writing. It helped my speaking. So I would be very interested to hear what you think of it, because it would, you know, you're obviously really great at holding your own on camera, and being kind of someone who's in the role of host, but what is it like when Josh is in front of people and has to say something and make them laugh?
I mean,
it's scary.
Yeah. Well, it's been interesting because I've never been in that situation before. I've like, just even here in Key West as the captain thing, you have to give a speech to everybody at the very beginning, but it's always been instructional. It's always been, hey, here are the life jackets. Here's how to use the bathrooms. Like, this is where you touch. This is where you don't touch. Like,
that's one everything. Way. That's just information.
Yeah, exactly. It's never been the expectations. Like, all right, Josh. All right, funny guy. Make me laugh.
Like, how do you get a response?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a really valuable tool for anyone who wants to do any speaking, both improv and stand up.
And I feel like there's an extension into life with that. There's, you know, way that you approach a conversation is also the way that you approach new challenges that come your way, just in general, giving you the confidence to try new things and to, you know, and not to feel like such a failure. Why do you think that people like, you know, back away when they're faced with something new and uncertain?
You mean like, well, obviously fear of failure. There's also this fear of somehow you're supposed to know how to do that already. I think there's this somehow like I'm supposed to know something. I mean, no, that's part of the fear. And in fact, you're not supposed to know anything. In fact, most people don't know much, including myself. It's embarrassing how much I don't know. But, you know, if you're not willing to withstand some discomfort in the name of your own growth, what are you going to do? I mean, how do you challenge it? I don't think people should be walking around terrified and outside of their comfort zone and doing things that terrify them. And like, you could walk around in a stress state like that all day. I don't do things that terrify me every day. I take on challenges that I think I can, you know, learn this and okay, I'll do it better next time. I think it's like trying not to be defined by the one thing you tried. And can you keep trying it? Okay, so I went and walked up to visit some friends up in the park here on the Upper West Side, and there are these big rings. You know, people like swing from one ring to the next. We sat there drinking margaritas and watched people do it. I said, it looks like I could do that. I think I could do that. And I went over there. I was like, I'm going to do it. And I hung onto this ring, and I was like, I get it. I can see it, how it works. You swing back, and then you just reach for the next ring. Oh, I reached for one ring. I fell flat on my face. And I was like, I was stunned at how weak I was, how I was not ready to swing from ring to ring. And I was like, but I thought I could do it. And I was like, and I laughed. I mean, we all laughed really hard, like, oh, well. And then I watched other people continue to do it. But sometimes you have to be faced with a place where you haven't strengthened that muscle yet and fail a little bit. Nah, nothing happened. I went back to my margarita. It was fine.
Exactly.
I don't know that I need to be good at that.
You know? Exactly. Exactly. It's just a reality check of who you are. And as long as I feel like you don't end up taking that as something you say, oh, well, I guess I'm not as strong as I used to be. So ring swinging as a thing is out for me now. Like if
I
you really
to do it, I guess. Yeah. But I also had no, I'd never done it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I failed at it, of course. And my arms hurt for days from one try.
You were also probably like a few margaritas in.
Yeah, it was.
You know?
It wasn't my, you know, it's not really your best place to like start a new sport, I would say. No.
But that idea, so I'm curious, like if you were to take that philosophy And let's say that you ended up having to start something new. You were going to completely start a new career, right? In something that you didn't have any experience in. How would you approach it?
Well, the truth is, I probably wouldn't, right? Like, because what's the reason you're changing a career? I think that the most tangible example of this that I can give you is I'm an editor and the next day I'm not an editor. And I go, okay. So, and I had been thinking like, am I going to just do this forever? Like edit stories for this magazine forever? No. So what do I do next? And then I got pushed out and I was like, oh, I guess you're going to learn real quick. And so I'll tell you how I faced that, because today I don't have a desire to change and go become a plumber because there's no need for me to do it. But what's happening now is that the conditions outside are making people reconsider. They lost a job. They don't know what they have to do next. They're worried that they're behind. This idea of being behind is crazy. But I'll tell you what happened when I got laid off. I said, okay, I'm not going to have to do that job anymore. In a lot of ways, part of it's a relief. But I still have the skills that I have to offer that aren't under in the pocket labeled magazine editor. Now all those tools are out of the pocket and they're just laying here. Who needs this? Who needs what I have? And I said, I don't want to go apply and work at another magazine. I've already done that. I've actually never had the same job twice. I just get bored real easy. So I change things up a lot. That's my personality. That's not everybody. But I said, someone needs this. So I stripped away the label. I didn't go, did anyone need a magazine editor? No, I said, who needs someone who can write, who can speak, who can take a complex idea and make it clearer, and who can create this for people? Who has the budget for that? Because I need to make a living. And so I started reaching out to companies, people I knew worked at companies. What's your worst nightmare content project that you would love someone to take? Want me to take it? I looked at what I had and what these tools could fix in other people's lives. It is service. And I'm telling you, like, yes, I had known people and I reached back out to them. I had some connections I'd worked hard to maintain. And when I got laid off, my income, like, first I was like, uh-oh, like I have some, you know, what they pay you, severance. They paid me that for a couple months. And I was a little afraid. Before that severance ran out, I had already almost doubled my income. When I realized, wait, here's what this is. Here's what people need. How do I get to price it? How do I get to create value around this? And I never went in going, oh God. And a lot of people did this. I'm an out of work editor. I'll do it for $20 an hour. Just give me anything. That kind of desperate, low to the ground. I need everything. I said, no, I've been doing this for a long time. This has value. What about this? Too high? Okay. How about this? How about this? I found the fits and then I just kept going. The reason I say this is because it happened again, and it happened for a lot of people who are watching right now, where all of a sudden we're in lockdown and one of my friends is a bartender / actor / writer. Guess what she doesn't have right now is that job. She's not bartending anywhere, but instead she's like, time to write. So she's been entering. She just is now a finalist in some screenwriting competition because now she has the time to do it. She's like, well, I better do something. What could I do that's of use? For me, I make a lot of my living speaking. I had events booked out the wazoo this past spring and every one of them canceled. And if two of the biggest ones that were going to be major client leads for the next year, I said, after this event, I'm good for the year. I don't even need to, I'm all set. Both canceled on the same day. And I sat over here on my couch and I did cry for a little while. And I was like, everything. I had a moment where I said, the world and nothing's working out. Everything's falling apart. This is, what am I going to do? I can't, I'm making money. You give yourself a little window. And I never cried over it again. I said, time to start tap dancing. Everyone else's parties are canceled. Looks like you better host a party. And so I started, I think every week I launched a new webinar, something. Does this work? Is this what people need? Is this what, how about this? I listened, I created the thing, and I was able to fill a program that I made up overnight. And I gave people a taste of it and gave them experience of it. It was a writing program. I'm still running it. It goes every 6 weeks. And I filled it during the worst downturn. Why? Because I'm magic? No, because I made sure I did not stop moving. And I made sure that what I needed now wasn't like, why doesn't anyone need what I have to offer? No, I said, what do people need right now? I'm going to serve that. So I don't know what could happen that could, if there's no internet, I am done. I think that'll be over.
Right.
But as long as I can keep doing it, you can keep doing it.
So that is a perfect segue into this next topic, which you pretty much just completely touched on and talked about, but I'll put it up anyway, just to give people some context, right? That what you said about it's that it's about keeping moving forward, right? giving yourself a little bit of space, right? Giving yourself not, you know, it's okay to feel that way.
Of course.
Right? Just as long as you feel it, move through it, take however long it takes, but then say, okay, I've done it. Now let's focus on what's ahead of me and how I'm going to take the underlying skills that I've learned in various occupations and never doing the same job twice. I love that. I'm the exact same and figuring out what is it that people need. And I think the important part of that as well is that most likely the first thing that you try is probably not going to work. Like you end up having to, you know, you end up having to test and tweak and change things and look at reactions from people and then test again.
Yeah,
you will totally. Eventually you'll land on it. You know, like you'll hone in on it. But it's I know that so many people have the expectation where they say, okay, I'm just going to give it a week. I'm going to think about this. I'm going to think about what people really need. I'm going to craft this amazing offer and then I'm going to give it to the world and people are
and everyone's going to buy it.
Yeah. And it doesn't work that way.
No, you're right.
So I applaud what you did because I think it's a great example for people to follow.
By the way, I filled that program quickly. It took me 2 weeks of free workshops and giving people into explaining to them and myself what it was. It's like 6 weeks of writing, right? But I had to do a lot of writing, like, what is this thing? What is this thing? And I didn't start from zero, by the way. I've been working for myself for, you know, almost a better part of a decade now. And so I've been building a list over the past few years and talking to them. And so I didn't start from zero. A lot of people are starting from zero. And it doesn't mean you fill some huge offering that you dream up overnight. Totally, 100%. But realize that I had been taking care of that list and writing to them and nurturing that list and listening to them. And so when I did have something to offer them, they were like, yeah, that sounds good. And then posted it places. Hey, does anyone over here on LinkedIn need this? Anyone here on Facebook need this? Anyone here on Instagram need this? Is this something you need? And I keep changing it. Every time a new disaster happens, I go on the sales page and tweak it to make sure that it doesn't sound tone deaf, that it's serving a need that we have right now. So for instance, when I was doing the writing program, when everyone had all this free time and they were in a panic, and I said, now's the time to get some of your writing done. Let me help. With all of what's happening now, with major unrest, protests, and real change happening, it wasn't about, hey, you have all this time anymore. That sounds not a fit. So I went in and changed it to speak to what the need was, which is you need to be heard. That it's a privilege to be heard. And the one thing I can do is give you a space to be heard. That's a completely different tilt. It's the same thing that I offer and can do and the thing I'm good at. But you have to keep meeting that need rather than why doesn't anyone like me, which is like a losing battle. But as you're saying, you don't know how it will come out or the day you, what about the people whose books came out on March 13th and their whole book tour was canceled?
Yeah.
You can never know the outcome, but don't be overly fixated on the outcome makes me a success. Your efforts have to build you somewhere. And if you're only going to, it's like an actor going, I'm only going to act in that movie if it's going to win an Oscar. Well, you don't get to do that. You better act a lot before you get in a movie that has a shot at being in an Oscar.
Well, so this is perfect because I feel like that has a lot to do with the whole searching for your passion idea, like circling back to the search, finding your passion idea, because like you said, it's not about the outcome. It's about essentially the journey to an outcome, right? Of some kind, way, shape or form. But I think that also when you see people that are good at something, like that classical cellist, right? And you say, oh man, they're so passionate about that. Well, what I think that passion, and it could be that they are incredibly passionate about the cello, but that passion itself is a passion for the journey, right? It's the process. It's like, it's the passion for the learning and, you know, and seeing and challenging yourself and seeing a new skill. You're like, oh man, that like, you know, change the way that you hold the bow a little bit and mastery. It makes this sound. Yeah.
You're right? Talking about mastery.
Well, it's the, yeah. And the process towards mastery ends up evoking passion within you for the nuance of it.
Totally. The truth of it is it's fun to do things that you're good at. It's fun to do things you're good at when the challenge raises up just a little bit. And with any art, you can see how you would never reach the top, right? You just keep improving. Let me tell you, a few years ago, I went on two dates with a pipe fitter. He was like a journeyman. I don't know. It's this whole trade world. Like I know nothing about it. And I was like a pipe fitter. And I thought, oh, that sounds like manual and sounds hard. It must be hard. I had all these stories from my very privileged position to assume that someone who does this stuff must not like it. Well, I checked my privilege right there because I said, well, what do you think about the job? How do you feel about what you do? And he said, I love it. I said, really? Why? And he goes, I'm so good at it. He wasn't really good at dating. So that is why that
felt. Yeah. But how'd the date go?
He was a child, but besides the fact he was probably better at pipe fitting. But the joke is that, the reality of what he was telling me is that when you allow yourself the chance to be good at something, it feels good to do. But people associate, oh, I have to be good at a thing like being an actor, a singer, or like I have to be one of these things. Being good at anything. If I watched, anyone who's watching, if I went over and saw any of you make a ham sandwich and you just made a ham sandwich like it's nothing. And I said, oh my God, how did you just do that? This is the best ham sandwich I've ever had. Wait, I need you to come to my event and teach people how to make ham sandwiches. I'm going to sell these ham sandwiches. What do you mean? Just a ham sandwich. This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. If you discovered that what you did was really good and that, you know what, I am good at this, and people started paying you $500 a sandwich, guess what you're going to be passionate about that you didn't think you were passionate about? Ham sandwiches.
Ham sandwiches.
The passion comes from having that, we're getting good at it, getting recognition. That can come from any job, any work, not something we think is cool.
Or that's just out there waiting to be discovered for us.
Start working.
Yeah.
Do the work and see what you're good at. People who job hop, like, oh, I didn't like that. I'm not passionate about that. I can't take that job. Really? Maybe you should take a job and learn it and see what you like about it. Meet some people who you really enjoy. And maybe people always say, I could never have imagined I'd be doing this. Why aren't we giving ourselves a chance to do that?
So what do you say to people that that try things for the first time, find out that they're not very good at them, and feel embarrassed?
I say, guess what? Why the hell? What arrogance, I'd say. Why would you think that you should be good at this yet? If you try it and you go, oh, this is, I hate this, then who cares how you did it? So judging our performance, that's a luxury. It's more about, why did you think you should be good at it? There's arrogance there. It's not humility. It's saying, yeah, I'm supposed to be awesome at stuff. You got to put in your time. I was a dancer for many years, and I was in this dance class where the warm-up was very hard. You had to take the class a bunch of times to really get it. And I finally had it. And some chick came in and was like huffing and puffing the whole time that she couldn't get, like she was so annoyed that she couldn't pick up the warm-up, and she was just like pissy about it. And I wanted to be like, listen, we've been here every Saturday morning learning to do this. What in the hell makes you think you should just waltz in here and know it? Learn it and get good at it. Stop assuming you should be great at it, or assuming that if you're not amazing, you're not going to do it. I'm going to take my toys and go home.
Right.
Not the best approach for living.
Well, and that idea, that propensity that, you know, I think that people think that their passion and what they're good at are going to sink, right? I think there's a misconception that there is something out there that you're just inherently incredible at, which is also the thing that you love to do.
Right. It's a secret Easter egg.
Yeah. And it's like, and you're right in a sense that the odds of that actually happening are almost zero. Like, just try something, take that expectation down. Don't be so hard on yourself, and give it the practice that it deserves so that you can get better.
Totally. It's just like, honestly, I got to tell you, it is just like dating. I mean, I'm telling you, you don't, if you go on every day being like, this is going to be the love of my life, guess how many times you're going to come home disappointed? A lot. And also, is that the goal? Like, can you be meeting people to see what happens when you meet them? If you were like, I can't love anyone until I find this one perfect person, I'm sure that person is somewhere and I gotta find this kind of, it's people, the same thing. It's this kind of fairy tale perspective of love and of work. You could love a lot of people if given the chance. And if you want to give yourself that chance. But this idea is like, I'm going to hold everything to myself until I find this perfect thing. How's that working out for you? How does that feel to be in a permanent holding pattern until you find the perfect thing?
Never going to happen.
Find it. You'll never find it.
Nope. Totally agree. And wow, like, I'm looking at the clock. It's already 44 minutes. This has been such a good conversation. This has been so fast. It feels like it's so fast. And so let me just circle back and say, if people want to connect with you a little bit more, if they want a little bit more of Terry, how do they find you?
Yeah, you can. I'm the only one with my name, and you can find me on any social media platform. But I would like to offer this gift, something I made to help people get around that internal critic and tap the part of them that is creative and brilliant. And you can just go to terrisentme.com. It's T-E-R-R-I sentme.com. And you can access the free guide. I mean, it's at least something. It's also an audio guide. It'd take you 20 minutes and at least you'll get deeper into more of thinking about how do I use this time now to access something that I could maybe make a living from.
It's exciting too. It's exciting, yeah. The prospects of it, you know, like once that pressure is off, that expectation, that super high expectation is gone. And you say, look, I'm just going to do my best. I'm going to learn it. I'm going to get around that inner critic, like you said, and just go for it. It's exciting what you can produce. And I think that you'll surprise yourself.
You will. But do you give yourself a chance to be surprised? I think the discovery, you know, ask anyone what they loved about their career and what they love about it is that they're good at what they do. There's always a way to keep getting better. And they feel the fulfillment of meeting the needs of a cause, a people, a purpose. Not what's my purpose, but how do I serve a purpose is a different conversation. And it's just much more freeing than if you worry about, you know, how you appear to the world. I find that exhausting. So hopefully that would be helpful. Yeah.
Same. Well, this has been amazing. This has been such a great conversation. Terry.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let me just say thank you so much for being on the show and taking the time to explain a lot of these things. I love your point of view. I love what you're doing. Seriously, the next time I'm in New York, I'm taking you out. We're grabbing a coffee or a margarita. We're swinging on some rings.
Oh my God. No, we're not. Oh my God. And, all those things, but swing from rings.
And yeah, so thanks again for everybody that's watching. Thank you so much for attending this episode. If you're watching live or on the recording and yeah, any parting words for people, Terry, before we go?
No, just be wary of fixing too much of the purpose of your life on the way things will turn out and more on what you can do right now.
Okay, you guys heard it first. This is Terry streaming from New York, Josh streaming from Key West. Thank you guys so much. Again, Terry, thank you. And this is we're signing off for another episode, another successful episode. So thank you again and adios.